Attention listeners, mark your calendars for Colorado Gives Day on December 10th. Support AfterSight and give to the causes you care about. Go to coloradogivesday.org/organizations/AfterSight between now and December 10th to make your donation.
Welcome to Blind Level Tech. I'm Jonathan Price.
I'm Evan Starnes.
And together, we're bringing you news, tech, and information about blind technologies.
Being blind doesn't mean you have to stop living.
We're going to show you just how possible it is to live the life you want.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Blind Level Tech. Hope you guys are enjoying the beautiful month of... Well, it's probably going to be June, actually, now as we're recording this. But I am your host, Evan Starnes, joined by the one, the only, Kelvin Crosby.
Hey, so good to see you, even though I can't see you. It's another beautiful day in the neighborhood, and I'm so excited that you are here. And I tell you, we got a cool guest today. We're going to do our best not to be way too nerdy here today. But I tell you, it's going to be amazing. And I tell you, we're talking 3D printing. We're talking 3D printers, and we're talking some new ways to look at two-dimension art to actual 3D images that you can actually feel visually impaired. So, Evan, tell us all about our guest today.
Well, yes, actually, and we're going to be talking about some cool, like, older stuff too. But this is Ted Tequichi. He's got an incredible tech journey. I'm not sure if he's been on the Blind Shake yet or not. But he
just was.
Oh, you were great. Yeah. So I'm not entirely sure when that episode drops, but dude's got a heck of a vision loss story. So definitely go and check that out when it drops. And yeah, Ted, welcome to Blind Level Tech. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me.
So, Ted, tell us a little bit about your story. And when did you become visually impaired? What's your visual impairment? And then how did you get in the tech world?
I started in the tech world out of college. I was a radio. I was a DJ for many years. I had a drive time radio show in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I was lured away from the disc jockey lifestyle and moved into the video games. I was offered a tester job, you know, just come and hang out and play games and have a good time and get paid for it. So I started with Atari in Sunnyvale, California. And, you know, just it was obviously just living the dream, you know, and just playing the games and writing up bug reports and that good stuff. And just kind of worked my way up through the corporate ladder there and started becoming an associate product manager or a producer, as they called it at Atari. And then eventually moved up to the senior producer role where I was overseeing other producers and making games myself. I worked on games for most of the Atari platforms. I have a couple 2600 games, 7800, 5200, Falcon, ST.
The Lynx.
Jaguar, Lynx, nice. I mean, yeah, and PC, a couple PC titles for Atari as well. And I was with them until they closed their doors, and then we moved to Accolade there in San Jose, and there I created the Test Drive Off-Road franchise. And I was there for a while until I moved to Mattel Toys and worked for their Hot Wheels division. I was in charge of all of the games for the Hot Wheels property. And at the height of my video game career, we got into a car accident, and everything kind of shifted in my vision where it was not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So I lost most of the vision in my right eye. It's like 95% gone, and all of the vision in my left eye is gone. Mm. So it's been an interesting ride as far as that goes. Yeah. So kind of moving and into doing other things and out of the tech industry.
So did you have a brain injury at that point? I mean, or just a vision loss issue?
No brain injury. And it was optic nerve and retinal detachment and retinal shift, which is very strange. Yeah. So I don't know. There's all kinds of different stuff going on. But basically, they went in there and they kind of tied everything back together with duct tape and baling wire. And it's, you know, knock on wood, it's got 5%. I can see blurry shapes and, I do have really good acuity for light value, which is how I get to be a photographer. So
absolutely.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
So Evan, why don't we look into that a little bit?
Yeah, because Ted, you kind of jumped ship, basically, and literally in some cases, from video game testing and design to travel and photography. So how did you actually get started with travel and photography in the very first place?
Yeah, I run the blindtravels.com website, and I've run that for, so that's like 2013 or some, or 2014 or something like that. And basically, I've always had a love of travel. When I worked in the games industry, I would be working externally most times because there's usually two teams. There's internal teams and external teams, and I was on external. So I had several different developer groups working for me in different areas of the world. So I spent most of the time, 3 weeks out of every month, I was either in London or, somewhere else in the UK, France, Germany, or very seldom here in the US. And, kind of just gave me the travel bug. And after the accident, I kind of had a compendium of information that I kept about the hotels that we went to, about like where the check-in desk was and the pool is located and all of the other hotel amenities like the restaurant and that sort of thing. So I would just keep this database of information, and then that originally transferred to Being Blind Travels, which was a kind of a website for me, just so that when I went to some place that I had already been to, that I could look at that and reference it. And then it kind of grew, and kind of went crazy. And that transitioned into doing a lot of the travel photography stuff. After the accident, I went back to school, and, something about visual art just drew me into doing that. So, pursuing a degree in visual art when you're almost completely blind is sometimes nothing short of madness, I think. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So
I can't imagine.
That's kind of where I ended up. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's really interesting you talk about that, because I mean, if people don't know, I'm also known as a deafblind potter. And I mean, it truly is something that, it's one of the main reasons why I got into pottery. I could 3D mold and shape my pottery. But before I was a painter, and man, I love painting. And I would make it somewhat tactile so I could touch it and interact with the paint. It made a mess of me, but it was something. Truly, the art form is quite incredible. And I mean, did you find, and for me at the deafblind potter, like clay was my healing mechanism to help me work through my deafblindness when I became deafblind. Did you find that as you were going to college and starting learning this new medium for yourself?
Very much so. We have twin boys, and they're 26 now, but during that time they were like 5 years old, and this was in 2000. And I'm sure you've heard the stories a million times where, the person that loses his sight is totally resistant to, orientation and mobility because I can see well enough, didn't want to use my white cane and wasn't going to sign up for a guide dog and, all of these things, even though I well qualified for all of it, and more. I was missing things around me, and I had done some photography when I was in college in the 80s, and kind of like did my dues in the dark room and that sort of stuff. But I ended up picking up the digital camera and kind of traveling around and having it around my neck all the time, and kind of capturing the things that I couldn't see because I couldn't. I didn't have any distance vision, everything was super blurry. So I would take the camera, take the picture, bring it home, and then, you know, see the things that I was missing on the computer screen afterwards.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And another thing that you seem to pick up, besides the lovely digital camera, is actually a really cool form of tactile or art that's a pretty modern innovation, and that would be 3D printing. So, as much as you can tell us, can you kind of tell us a little bit about this this business that you've got going that makes images into tactile 3D prints?
Certainly. Yeah. Late last year, we started a partnership with Redline Contemporary Art Center here in Denver and the Andy Warhol Foundation for Visual Art. And what we are doing is we're working on a body of work, which I probably should to talk a little bit about the body of work. When I was in school originally, I put together a collection of portraiture that was abstract visions of the human body.
Wow.
So originally I had been tasked as one of the assignments in the photo class to do classic portraiture. And she said, make sure that you have, you know, either a smiling face or a serious face, and, you know, make sure that you have, you know, light in the eyes and all these other things. And I'm like, oh, I can't see any of that. You know, how am I going to do that? So I talked with the teacher and said, can I do something else? You know, can I look at another way of doing portraiture? So we went back and forth and we ended up on doing hands. So I was looking at doing, you know, pictures of praying hands and playing hands and working hands and all these different things, but lighting it from a, you know, classic portraiture mm-hmm. style. And, then it just kind of progressed from there. I started, you know, doing a little bit more of like the body and the arms and that sort of stuff. And then it moved into doing full nudes, which is, you know, very interesting because it doesn't have any of the naughty bits. You know, it's all, you know, safe for work. You know,
hey,
it's
not explicit. When I started learning about it, I'm like, what are we going on there?
Right.
I mean, do we need to go to
especially if I'm making tactile prints, I'm not going to make boobs and stuff that you can touch.
Oh,
I mean, sorry. Do we need to go to an adult
that's
website?
For the sculptors. But anyway, so I ended up doing these kind of very low light, pictures so that, you know, we work in a very dark environment. And then I shoot, you know, very close to the model and kind of, we're getting little bits of like arm and sometimes parts of the neck, and we're lighting it kind of on the edge and that sort of thing. So, the body of work is like super inclusive. So it includes people, participants who are male, female, and several other genders. And we have people who range in age from 19 to 76. We have grandmothers, we have, you know, young people, and boy, it's, you know, plus size to size zero. It's just, it's really amazing. We have people who are mobility impaired, wheelchair users. And it's just, you know, it tries to kind of touch on everybody and everything. Yeah. And so it was like really inclusive, but not inclusive for people who are visually impaired. Exactly. Right. And that was kind of the big thing, is making it accessible. And how are we going to do that? Mm-hmm. And we started originally with a company here in Colorado called Duraplac. And what they would do is, are you guys familiar with them?
I am.
I'm not. This is the first time. But
gotcha. So they have an embossing style of photo that they do on metal, they layer ink like you would in a regular, you know, tactile print or a paint or whatever. And then they put a clear coat over it. So it's touchable if you want to. So we worked with them, you know, and kind of finessed that style, and kind of brought it to the next level for them so that we could make some tactile prints. And that's what kind of led us into working with the Lighthouse for the Blind. And we've had a several year solo exhibition there with that body of work, which is really cool. It's been in their lobby and people have been able to see it and people can touch the prints and stuff. But the problem is that those prints are really expensive to make.
Yeah.
And there's no way to have the body of work in more than one location at a time because it costs so much money to have the prints made. So that's what we were looking at with Redline and with the Warhol Foundation, was taking things to the next level with 3D printing so that we could actually have the ability to iterate the tactile prints rather than having somebody else do it. So it kind of put it all back into my court as an artist, right? Yep. Instead of having somebody else do the print, then I was able to do it myself.
Absolutely.
So late last year we started, and super long story, sorry.
No worries.
No, you're good.
So late last year we started with them, and they purchased some 3D printers for us and a bunch of other stuff, which was really great. And just kind of threw us into the deep end and said, good luck. Hopefully you can do something that nobody else is doing.
Yep. Well, what's interesting is in the 3D printing world, and again, 3D printing for visually impaired is a pain in the rear end. Let's just be straight.
Yes, it is.
And I mean, I've always used Tinkercad for my CAD and software because I can just code everything from the browser. And so it works great. It does the simple things. It's not great, but it does the job. I mean, and you can program JAWS and also NVDA to get the different parts to the to get your numbers in there and all that stuff. So, And so, Evan, have you ever used any 3D printing software before?
I had the opportunity to, but it wasn't accessible. It was I think it was called OpenCAD back in high school, and I had always just seen the 3D printer we'd had, the MakerBot Replicator 5, was a very menu-driven machine, as in you spin this little wheel around, hit it to select options. It wasn't super accessible, so I kind of was just like, okay, maybe this will be accessible one day, but I don't know how to make it accessible.
So, I think that printers at that time were basically you receiving a box of stuff, and you had to put it all together.
Yeah.
I mean, and let's talk about your 3D printer. I mean, you guys are using bamboos, and those are some sweet printers right there, man. I mean, I have raised 3Ds and Prusas, but tell us a little bit what kind of made you guys go into the bamboo route.
So I did, with everything I do, doesn't matter whether it's, traveling to a new location or whether it's buying a piece of equipment, I do exhaustive, painful research and comparisons. I talk with people that are in the industry. I got into contact with in the particular 3D printing realm, a whole bunch of people that were making software and stuff like that. And, kind of went for the, okay, what's your dream printer? What is it that you would get if you could buy one today? And money was not an object. And without question, the X1 Carbon from Bamboo Labs with the AMS, automatic material system was the one. And that was because of the slicer stuff. The bamboo slicer is really good, but it also just works.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why we headed in that direction. The problem with bamboo is that they're not super responsive about technical support. Yep. So kind of learning a new technology for me, because I hadn't done much 3D printing, was a little bit difficult, and I had to outsource it to a lot of people that I know that are, have been tinkerers and doing 3D CAD or 3D printing for a long time. It was definitely thrown into the deep end as far as that goes.
Yeah. And too bad we're just meeting now. I would introduce you to the Raise 3D. They got an amazing tech support team there.
Gotcha.
But you're in Bamboo World, and you might as well stay because it's a good product. And
It is.
Yeah. So I think we can go really deep into the 3D printing. What filament are you guys using? Because, I mean, obviously you're going to need to give details. So PLA is okay for that, but you're going to need a little bit more fine tuning. So what kind of filaments are you guys using?
Most of the stuff, I do all of my iterations in PLA. I can talk a little bit about the process. So I think that, kind of taking a step back once, that I didn't really talk about what we're doing with the actual 3D printer. So, once we have the pictures in hand, then we're taking and going through, if you throw them into like a lithophane maker or something like that, and then just dump them to a 3D printer, the problem is that you're going to get some tactile feel out of it, but you're not going to have as much in the way of subject matter separation from background and that sort of thing. Yeah. So what we do is we take them and we throw them into Photoshop and we do a whole bunch of Photoshop voodoo and output a file that works with the 3D. I'm kind of hesitating because there's some things that I can and can't talk about. So we're outputting the files, but what it allows us to do basically is to run Photoshop texture extractor, and then gives us four different distinct layers of texture on the 3D print.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So that allows, if you're taking a picture of a mountain or whatever, then you can select the mountain because, you know, Photoshop's got some really wonderful subject selection tools now with all their AI, you know, stuff going on. And then you can select that out and set it as a specific layer that's going to print as high as you want it to be. You know, you can do up to like a 5mm print if you want, to get like ludicrous level of texture. Or you can do it more kind of, you know, fine art and do it in the like 2.5 to 3mm range.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the way that we're approaching it. So
absolutely.
We're taking these abstract body pictures, and we're throwing it through Photoshop Nightmare and then sending it to Bamboo Lab. And all the iteration stuff is being done with PLA. But for the most part with the texture extractors that we're doing, we're able to stay with that.
Okay.
So that's you know, to answer your question in a very long way, we're staying with PLA because they're it's a cheap filament.
Yep.
We're using bamboo filament, bamboo PLA, and because we're not really worried about, you know, super longevity because they're easy to reprint. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, Evan, I think one of the things that when you experience tactile art, do you find that if it's too detailed, it's difficult to feel?
Oh yeah,
it's staticky.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. It's like a sensory overload. In fact, it kind of brings me back to, and maybe you, I don't know, Ted, if you might have had to deal with this in college, but those tactile maps in the big textbooks. Yep. I remember taking U.S. history, and they tried to have me decipher those, and I just couldn't. It was too much.
I completely agree, and that really was one of the big concerns with me when we started this project, was that, like I said, it feels very much like static to me. So when I'm touching something and there's just too much detail and not enough separation between the objects within the print, then it's really just, you know, overwhelming. And you want it to be accessible to kind of every level of viewer. We've kind of taken a fine art photography approach to it, where you're basically pushing and pulling the things that are important in your image farther or closer to you in the composition, if that makes sense. Yeah,
absolutely. That makes sense.
I mean, I think what's really interesting is, so for those, I'm going to do a shameless plug here, but for the month of June, Deafblind Potter is going to be doing a tactile experience through art. And so nice. If you want to watch my experiences with picking up random pieces of art and feeling it and telling me what I think, Deafblind Potter is going to be doing that on Instagram and TikTok. What's interesting is why I asked this question is because it's truly... when I was building maps and so forth for the visually impaired, right before COVID, this was something that was a major issue, is getting the detail that you need and also making it visually appealing. And I'm curious, Ted, are you really, how are you guys just kind of working out those different color situations for people like low vision and that can want that tactile experience, but also can kind of take out that color situation?
Yeah. So we're separating church and state so much. What we're doing is when we exhibit a piece, when a piece is shown, we do the traditional print.
Yeah.
So that's like just a standard traditional 11x14 print in a frame. And then alongside, we actually have the tactile print. Uh-huh. And we've made a little like holder for it that we can, you know, use a little command strip and stick it on the wall next to it. But so you can actually take the tactile print out if the if the establishment is cool with that, so that you can actually spend time with it and feel all of the parts. But along with that, the problem is that you don't have a lot of context when you're just touching something if mm-hmm. you're not told what it is.
Yeah.
So we have tactile QR codes. Mm-hmm. So that we've made with RFID tags. So you can either just scan it with your phone, and we use tactile so that you can tell where to put your camera, because that's one of the biggest things. QR codes are great, but if you can't tell where to, yep. to like put your camera, then
it's not much help. They're completely inaccessible otherwise. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So with that and the RFID tag, then they're pretty accessible. And so what that does is that triggers a full audio description of the experience that you're going to have when you're looking at the tactile print.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
I'm definitely interested in this kind of when are you guys bringing this really to market? Like, are you guys doing beta testing, or where are we at with this?
We've been working with the National Federation of the Blind, the Boulder group, and a bunch of other people that I know that are blind. We've been working with them, and the first time we're going to show it is going to be at the National Federation for the Blind, their national conference in okay. Florida, which is really cool.
Well, I'll see you there. I'm
super excited about that. And then it's going to be here in Colorado, and we're going to be showing it at the National Federation for the Blind, the state Colorado State Convention. Mm-hmm. I think it's in Lakewood, if I remember.
Yep, right. Lakewood. Yep.
Yeah. End of October. Hey, end of October.
Nice. Yeah. It's always on Halloween.
Yeah. And we're also going to be showing it at the Shine Music Festival in August. So that's August 24th.
Oh, sweet. You're going to be at the Shine Music Festival. We'll be there as well. Aftersight's going to be attending that. So that'll
excellent.
Be awesome.
Yeah. And I'm going to be, I guess, on the Blind Chick podcast there as well. So
heck yeah, absolutely.
It should be fun. It should be lots of fun.
Absolutely. Well, one thing that is also really fun is actually not even closely related to photography or 3D printing. In fact, it's not even technological, but it is
the sandwich of the week.
I'm going to go first because I have a really boring sandwich and, well, let's just say I was at Subway this week. Last weekend, and I wanted a quick fix, and I ended up ordering a tuna sub. And I know a lot of people don't like tuna, but I love it. And that was one of the very few times I could eat an entire foot long in one sitting. But Kelvin, you got a sandwich of the week for us?
Well, mine is I'm calling this the Kelvinator sandwich. And that is, it is tuna with some jalapenos with mayonnaise and pepper jack cheese on some pepper jack bread.
Yum.
And not pepper jack it's bread, delicious. but a jalapeno pumpernickel. Bread.
Oh, jalapeno bread. Yeah, pumpernickel's tiny.
So, Ted, what is your sandwich for the week?
Oh, my goodness. Probably shout out to the guys at Crave Burgers in Castle Rock. Have you guys been there?
No, but it's a place I'll be adding to my list.
It is worth the pilgrimage if you're up here up north. They have a burger called the Campfire that is an absolute favorite of mine. It's got a raspberry barbecue sauce on it.
Wow.
It comes with deep fried jalapeno bottle caps on it.
Oh, wow.
It's got fried onions that are dusted in coffee. And wow. It has pepper jack cheese, and it's a bison patty. So, yeah, no question, yes. That's my favorite burger.
Bison is such the way to go. One of my favorites, yes. too. I will be checking that out.
Well, yes, well worth it.
Absolutely. Well, Ted, there's one little question that we actually meant to ask at the beginning. We kind of forgot it. We've kind of added a new thing to our format since it's BLT, where we like to ask, you know, people what their favorite tech product is. It can be AT or just, you know, whatever standard consumer tech. Just because you might find a new device, or you know, it's fun to talk tech. So, Ted, what is your like current favorite piece of technology?
I will absolutely answer that, but I'm also going to throw a question back at you, and I'm going to say, and I'll give you a minute to think while I blah blah about what my favorite tech is. And the question to you is, what is it about tech that drives you insane?
Oh, okay. That's my goodness, so, that's a loaded one.
So my favorite tech is old school. I really love audiobooks, and I love the fact that the written word can be presented in a different way. And I think that that kind of has been my whole like methodology for life and art and everything else, is that just finding a different way. So just, you know, the way that I do photography, it's not traditional, and it's, you know, definitely from a blind person's standpoint, but you know, hey, it's a different way. And so, you know, anything that has to do with, allowing me to kind of move into doing, experiencing a really cool, audiobook is something that I love. There's a bunch of guys called, Sound Booth Theater, if I remember correctly, and they do lit RPG stuff. So if you like games, then they do a whole bunch of different books on, different, like, you know, talking about journeys through dungeons and that kind of stuff. And it really is just a lot of fun to read, to listen to their stories.
Absolutely. No, that's really cool. And trust me, we'll get to your question here in a bit. But I'll say for this week, my piece of tech is nothing super fancy at all. But a couple weeks ago, I got a new mechanical gaming keyboard from a friend. And before that, I'd had the Razer Black Widow Ultimate, and it had the Cherry MX, I think they were the MX Blue switches, but really loud, clacky, you know, it's a proper clacking box, but not the most ideal thing if I'm on like a Zoom call or if I'm trying to record a podcast. So this one has much quieter switches and a nice little, like, it has this cool little magnetic wrist rest. It's also a Razer, and I've been loving the heck out of that thing. But Kelvin, you got a piece of tech?
Yeah, so I got some smart glasses. So they're from Razer, and so basically what you do is you put them on, you connect them to your phone, and then they're essentially earbuds that are not on your ear but on your glasses, and it's all quiet. It's like there's a little speaker on the sides, and then they're like right now like they're $50, and they're normally $230. Goodness gracious. So yeah, they're a good buy right now on Amazon, and they have good sound quality. If you can hear, for me, I was trying to work with it for my hearing aids. It didn't work that great. So if you're a hearing aid user, it's not ideal, but for people that can hear well, I tell you, it's pretty awesome. My wife tried it, and a couple other people have tried it, and they're like, this sounds amazing, and there's nothing in my ears. And so if the the aftershocks don't work for you, or the bone conductive, but you want to have a non plugged or headphones on, the Razer glasses on Amazon are the way to go.
Absolutely. Nice. Well, Ted, it has been a bit, it's been really fun having you on BLT today. Really hope you enjoyed sitting and chatting with us for a bit. Is there anything you would like our audience to walk away with from this episode in particular?
Feel free to follow me on social media. Probably the best way would be at Instagram at Nedskee, NEDSKEE. You can see more about learn more about the work that I was talking about. That's called Landscapes of the Body. And the website is bodyscapes.photography. And then you can also see, kind of the hub of all of my online stuff is just my last name, THQUECHI.com.
Very, very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming back every single week and listening to BLT with us. And just as a reminder, our AfterSight Audio Trekkers hike is coming up in a month. Yeah, just about a month, July 27th. And if you want to register for that bad boy, you'd want to go to aftersight.org/hike. Additionally, if you got any feedback for our podcast hosts and or just any questions for our podcast, we actually did get one that we will highlight in another episode. But if you have any feedback, questions, whatever it might be, you can always email feedback@aftersight.org or call 720-712-8856. With that being said, I'm your host, Evan Starnes. This is Kelvin Crosby.
Plug in your device.
And we will catch you guys next week.